Penguin Random House Audio presents Known and Strange Things, Essays by Teju Cole. Read for you by Peter J. Fernandez.
Preface. So, the Spear Danes in days gone by, and the kings who ruled them had courage and greatness. We have heard of those princes' heroic campaigns. When I am trying out a new pin in a shop, I write out the first words of Beowulf, as translated by Seamus Heaney. Years ago, I memorized that opening page. After a while, those were the words that came most readily to hand when I was testing the flow of ink. And once, an attendant in a shop, reading over my shoulder, said, "Hey, that's real nice. Did you just make that up right now, or?" We are our habits in sum. If someone asks me to say something in Yoruba, almost without thinking about it, I recite a tongue twister from childhood. Opolopo opolo ni komope, opolopo enian lopolo lopolopo. Many frogs do not know that many people are very intelligent. During soundcheck at a speech or public event, to test the microphone, instead of singing scales or counting, I start telling Lucian Freud's favorite joke. A joke about bodily fluids that is also notable for not being particularly Freudian in the sense associated with Lucian's grandfather, Sigmund. The wife of an alcoholic man had finally reached the end of her patience and said to him, "Listen, I can't take this anymore. If you come home drunk one more night, with drink on your breath and vomit all over your shirt, it's over. We're getting a divorce." He manages to stay out of trouble for a while, but soon he gets the itch to drink again, and his friends insist that he come out with them that weekend. Usually by this point, the sound engineers tell me they've got what they need, and so the joke ends there. I reiterate Beowulf. I recite my Yoruba tongue twister. I tell Lucian Freud's joke. We are creatures of private convention. But we are also the ways in which we enlarge our coasts. This book tracks some of my most vital enthusiasms, and even the semi-alert reader will quickly determine which places and writers are my touchstones. But it also registers some first encounters, including encounters with certain things I now consider irreplaceable parts of my life. The man says, "No, my wife has reached the end of her rope. I can't come home drunk anymore." And one of his mates says, "Listen, it's easy. Just put a 20 in your front pocket." "A 20 in my front pocket? What for?" "So that when you come home, in case you've thrown up on your shirt, you can tell her, 'I'm sober, but some fellow in the pub threw up on my shirt.'" He was very apologetic, and in fact, "What's this?" You bring out the 20. "He gave me a 20 to get the shirt clean." I used to wonder what creative freedom would look like. If I could write anything I wanted, what would I write about? It has been my immense good fortune to have exactly that opportunity. Through the work I was assigned at various papers and magazines, in response to various occasions and invitations, I was able to follow my nose and think through a wide variety of subjects. The area I returned to most often was photography. But literature, music, travel, and politics were also subjects in which I was deeply absorbed. Through the act of writing, I was able to find out what I knew about these things, what I was able to know, and where the limits of knowing lay. So this guy thinks, "That's a brilliant idea." That weekend, he goes out with the lads and they get drunk out of their minds, as usual. He staggers home. He's thrown up on himself. He's a mess. She's waited up and immediately says, "Look at you. You're disgusting. You lack self-control. It's over." "Wait, wait," he sputters. At this point, the sound engineers reiterate that they definitely have enough. Thanks very much. This book takes a more flexible approach to essays than most books of its kind. But it is not a compendium of all the nonfiction I have in print, over an 8-year period of almost constant writing. It is certainly not an attempt to give a systematic account of all my preoccupations. I have excluded a large number of smaller pieces, a few newspaper columns, and some essays that were too topical for inclusion. In the years covered by these essays, I thought a great deal about poetry, music, and painting. I traveled to dozens of countries, and I engaged with many interesting artists whom I did not write about, or did not write about to my satisfaction. There is another possible book that contains all that is not in this one. In that book, other habits take center stage. Other unfamiliar experiences are recorded, and the jokes are told all the way to the end. That book's disadvantage, though, would be its exclusion of what is published here. It would omit these gathered experiences in favor of others. That other book might have a different tenor. It might perhaps be more critical in tone, be more analytical in approach, contain more argumentative opinion. But this book, though it has all those elements, favors epiphany. I think of Mrs. Ramsay's words in To the Lighthouse. Everything seemed possible. Everything seemed right. Of such moments, she thought, the thing is made that endures. This book contains what I have loved and witnessed, what has seemed right and what has brought joy, what I have been troubled and encouraged by, and what has fostered my sense of possibility and made me feel, as Seamus Heaney wrote, like a hurry through which known and strange things pass. Teju Cole, Brooklyn, July 2016. Section 1. Reading Things. Black Body. Then the bus began driving into clouds, and between one cloud and the next we caught glimpses of the town below. It was supper time, and the town was a constellation of yellow points. We arrived 30 minutes after leaving that town, which was called Loik. The train to Loik had come in from Fischb. The train from Fischb had come from Bern, and the train before that was from Zurich, from which I had started out in the afternoon. Three trains, a bus, and a short stroll, all of it through beautiful country, and then we reached Leukerbad in darkness. So Leukerbad, not far in terms of absolute distance, was not all that easy to get to. August 2, 2014. It was James Baldwin's birthday. Were he alive, he would be turning 90. He is one of those people just on the cusp of escaping the contemporary and slipping into the historical. John Coltrane would have turned 88 in the same year. Martin Luther King Jr. would have turned 85. People who could still be with us, but who feel at times very far away, as though they lived centuries ago. James Baldwin left Paris and came to Leukerbad for the first time in 1951. His lover, Lucien Hoppersberger's family, had a chalet in a village up in the mountains. And so Baldwin, who was depressed and distracted at the time, went, and the village, which is also called Loeche-les-Bains, proved to be a refuge for him. His first trip was in the summer and lasted 2 weeks. Then he returned, to his own surprise, for 2 more winters. His first novel, Go Tell It on the Mountain, found its final form here. He had struggled with the book for 8 years, and he finally finished it in this unlikely retreat. He wrote something else, too, an essay called Stranger in the Village. It was this essay, even more than the novel, that brought me to Leukerbad. Stranger in the Village first appeared in Harper's Magazine in 1953, and then in the essay collection Notes of a Native Son in 1955. It recounts the experience of being black in an all-white village. It begins with a sense of an extreme journey, like Charles Darwin's in the Galapagos, or Tete Michel Kepomassis in Greenland.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?